Michael Keaton, perfect casting. Choosing someone who was known for superhero movies is so good. What a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's a real stroke of genius, that casting, because it does work on several levels. Like, the character's got so much detail in it that it's not just a gag of, oh, he used to be a superhero, now he's playing a character who used to be one. It's like, there's way much more.
It is always a pleasure to see Michael Keaton on. I can't
in
think
anything,
of
really.
So charismatic,
isn't
he?
Film or bad performance he's put in.
This is FlixWatcher Podcast, and this is episode 44. We are joined by Susan and Gemma from the podcast Haley and Ruth, 2 stars. And we will be reviewing the film Birdman.
As always, guys, we have all the show notes online at FlixWatcher.tv for all the episodes, so please come and visit us there. Of course, join us on Twitter at FlixWatcherPod, and please come to iTunes, rate us, and subscribe.
All films featured in the podcast were available to stream on Netflix UK at the time of recording, and please be aware there will be spoilers and some language that may offend. Hello and welcome to this edition of FlixWatcher Pod. Today we are joined by Susan and Gemma. Hello, ladies.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Hi, guys.
Hello, yeah, welcome.
Of course. It's been a long time coming, actually, hasn't it?
Yes.
I think it's maybe even like 6 months we've been trying to get you guys, but you've been so busy.
Oh God, we've been so busy. Yeah, the diaries have not synced up.
No, I know. Yeah, well, the email chain has been like 80 emails long, which is impressive, isn't it? Between us four trying to,
it was like,
trying to get together.
What films were we watching this weekend before? What film are we discussing?
So, we are discussing Birdman, which is exciting.
Absolutely.
Or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. Which is the alternative
title. Yes, the alternative title,
which no one ever knows.
No.
And you chose it, Susan.
Yes, I did, yeah. And so Birdman is basically about Regan Thompson, played by Michael Keaton.
Yep.
So he's a Hollywood actor who is best known for playing a superhero character, Birdman, a bit like Batman or Spider-Man. And he's trying to gain some credibility by putting on a Raymond Carver play that he's adapted.
Yeah.
So it's basically following the previews up until press night and everything that he has to deal with. And the thing that I find particularly lovely is that he's tormented by the inner voice of Birdman throughout. So that's a nice, weird curveball.
But all the way through the film.
Through the film, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's the, because this one, I think, well, it won loads of Academy Awards, but the one that really sticks in my mind is it won the Academy Award for Best Cinematography.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's, I think the cinematography is the star of it almost, even more than Michael Keaton is, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One take in inverted commas, even though, I mean, they've cheated it, so it looks like one take. But that's exciting. I think it's exciting. I love that kind of high concept. I think that's why I'm a fan of The League of Gentlemen and Inside Number 9, because they set themselves these...
It's parameters.
Really high concept targets.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about
it. Yeah, totally. And apparently the feeling on the film set at the end of every day was like, yes, we've achieved it. We've got through it. Because it was technically, it's an amazing feat. Because although, like you say, it's not completely one take, but a lot of it is. It's almost is.
Yeah.
And they had to rehearse it so much.
Almost like a play, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
The scenes are long, and those are, it's sort of, the cheated cuts are when the camera's drifting down a corridor, for example. Mm. But the takes would have been long, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Long, long takes.
Well, you guys, I guess one thing we haven't said is who you are and what you do.
That's a good point, isn't
but
it?
You guys, you're actors.
Yeah.
So you guys know more about this industry than myself and Helen do. Mm. So I guess the technological feats of this film in terms of long takes in a TV and film scenario, you're very much aware of that compared to what we just kind of think, well, there are stage actors who have to learn everything off book.
And
I guess a lot of film actors and TV actors kind of just know their side.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But I think I've just thought of something, but I'll probably get in trouble. I think, we both went to drama school, didn't we, Susan?
Yeah.
And drama school teaches you stage acting. That's basically what it does. And then yeah. you get out into the world, and we've both mostly done, apart from stuff we've written ourselves, we've kind of mostly done television and radio.
Yeah.
And that's like...
I don't know, I've mostly done stage.
Yeah, I suppose you have. You've yeah. done like Peter Pan Goes Wrong and everything like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Susan's amazing on stage.
She's amazing.
And Robin and Marion, which you were brilliant in.
Oh.
She like swung from the... Seriously, it was so cool. You did like wire work. It was awesome. Anyway, but I, well, okay, so I've done mostly TV, and you have to kind
and
of...
And you're Gemma.
Gemma, yes, yeah. Gemma, me, Gemma Arrowsmith. And you kind of... I had to learn that mostly just on the job, because we'd done a little bit at drama school, but not loads. And I felt it was like... this is where I'm getting in trouble. The difference between like draft and chess, it was like, oh... And there's like the dance of the cameras around you that you have to learn as well. It's yeah. not like the audience is there. That's where they're always going to be. The audience will stay there. They're not going to move unless you're doing something like Promenade Theatre, and that's where they are. And suddenly there's this whole extra dimension that's added in with cameras. So that's why my jaw was kind of on the floor watching Birdman, because you're going, oh my God. And they'd have to remember where their cameras are going to be. And then that has to go round the back, and they'd have to remember. Like, it's just, it is an incredible feat to watch.
Yeah, that's so yeah. true, because the choreography for the crew as well,
yes,
as
exactly.
well as the actors.
So
like,
they're not
yeah.
seen, they have to be behind yeah. camera the whole time. So when you see those shots, like the ER, the classic ER
yeah,
shot
absolutely.
That goes around them. And so I always imagine like just loads of crew running behind the camera.
And there's always a cable person.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
yeah.
Helen's a big fan of ER.
I am.
That classic shot of yep. it circling them that they did over and
How
over.
How many times have you watched ER now?
All the way through 3 times.
Whoa.
And then I've dipped in like a few times here and there.
Yeah, that is impressive.
So before we go back into discussion on Birdman,
yeah.
do tell us who you are.
Oh yes, that's yeah. a good point.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. So I'm Susan, Susan Harrison, and I'm a character comedian, an actor, an improviser. And myself and Gemma have a podcast together, which is called Hayley and Ruth, Two Stars, where we play two dickhead reviewers, basically, don't we?
Yeah.
two idiots of different types.
Yeah. Hayley Danks and Ruth Goodchild. They don't just review films and books, though. They reviewed people's lives. They reviewed The Eclipse, which I liked. Yeah. The Royal Family.
Little Brexit. Chef Menu.
Little Chef
Brexit.
Menu.
Yeah.
Brexit. So they'll review anything for you. it's fun playing them.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a reviewer in Birdman, which I wanted to talk about.
Absolutely. yeah. Well, compared to your real experience.
Yeah.
yeah. And our fictional experience.
Yes. I like anything that has a slight jab at critics is okay by me.
Yeah.
and this right, critic. So this, what's the character's name in? We meet her in the bar, and she says she's going to slate
the play yeah.
before she's even seen it.
yeah.
So when at the well, spoilers, the play goes very well, and she gives it a rave review. It's like yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, she was the first to walk out actually at the
yeah.
end. She was
yeah,
the first
yeah.
to leave yeah. the theatre
to file her copy.
Yes,
perhaps. Yeah. Yeah.
So why did you choose it, Susan?
Yeah, so funnily enough, getting back to, I think partly because I am an actor
yeah.
and I have done a lot of theatre, and recently I did do a farce, and I love the fact that Birdman seems, in lots of ways, it is really sort of like otherworldly and highbrow and surreal, and I love all of those things, but I also love the fact that it is a farce
yeah.
and that there are, you know, there's lights dropping, there's yeah. people coming through this doors at certain times
yeah.
there's like people being caught kissing, and I just think that's brilliant.
There's
that
Mike Keegan walking in his pants through
yeah,
Times Square.
Yes. Oh yeah, and that moment I really identified with, because not that I've literally
there's quite a lot of underwear action in this film.
There is
yeah.
and bottom down nudity from
yeah, yeah.
Do you really identify with that?
Yes, I really identify with that moment, because that I just thought there's a lot of things that happen backstage that
yeah.
in that film that really could happen, and I have a really bad sense of direction, and when I've been on tour in different theatres, there is like a real possibility of getting lost within the theatre.
Sure,
you know, like in Spinal Tap when they get lost down the stairs. And so I just felt like that would happen to me. I'd be going outside the back door and it would close behind me, and I'd have to run through Leicester Square, you know, run through the living statues and the buskers and stuff. And so, yeah, I just really identified with it. But yeah, I think that was one of the reasons I chose it. It's because it chimes with me, all that.
Absolutely.
The world of backstage, and the fact that it is almost in one shot feels very much like you get into this sort of theatre bubble. when you're doing a show. And it felt like that was really well expressed by the way they did it technically.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right about the high and low art. It does feel huge and magical and small and intimate at the same time. And that's sort of beautiful. And how they do that, it's so clever. Yeah. I wonder, that was the thing I was going to mention. So this one, it's got like Oscars coming out of its arse, this film, basically. Mm. And I was going to put it, I was going to ask the question of everyone here. Because I think you asked us, do you think it's, was it like, is it worthy of an Oscar or whatever? Yeah, yeah. I wonder whether the Oscar panel is more likely to give something an Oscar that's about the industry that they're all in.
Mm.
Like, I think it's a brilliant film and it totally deserves it. But I wonder whether it's because you've got loads of actors, directors.
Yeah.
Watching a film about loads of actors, directors going, oh yes, that's so very
generally
true.
That's what happens. La La Land, The Artist, it goes on and on. They do love a film
and
about
the documentary. Is it something like 15 feet from stardom or however many feet from stardom?
20 feet from stardom.
20 feet from stardom, which is about backing singers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that won the best documentary. And I would suggest maybe there were other more deserving documentaries. I did enjoy that documentary but I think it's everyone go, oh yes, the showbiz, I understand that,
yeah,
that's the one. You know, there are books about writing books, about the struggle of writing books, and there are films about the struggle of making films, mm-hmm. and a lot of Woody Allen's films are about a writer and so on, for example. So I wonder whether it got a lot of favorable reviews and accolades because of that.
Well,
maybe
I mean we can run briefly through the list of Oscars that it won. Best Picture, Best Director for Alejandro G. Iñárritu, and Best Original Screenplay. And also it won Best Cinematography by Emmanuel Lubezki.
And Keaton also got nominated, right?
He got nominated, yeah. And Emmanuel Lubezki also shot The Revenant.
Which he won as well.
I mean, it was a strong year for films about drumming.
Yeah.
Seeing it was up against Whiplash as well.
Whiplash.
There should have been like another category, best film about drumming.
But it wasn't about drumming, but there's definitely
lots of drumming.
And
I
also
think that gives it another worldly quality as well. Just this sort of just drumming soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Like, what?
Yeah, totally.
When do you hear that?
There is, because one of my Spotify playlists is the Birdman soundtrack back to back with a Whiplash soundtrack. And I think
Works
really well.
And then stomp immediately after, right? It's just percussion.
I'm going to add that to it now.
Okay, great. Thanks.
I think also up for an award that year was Boyhood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, Selma, Theory of Everything. It was that year.
So that's beautiful. I mean, that's a superbly strong year.
It's 2014, right? Yeah.
Mm.
That's a really strong year.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's a lot of high concept. I mean, Boyhood's a very high concept thing. This is a very high concept.
Mm. I like that, though. I like Whiplash when people take chances.
You know,
like that.
High concepts. Anything that Wes Anderson does is is up there.
Pretty and symmetrical. Yeah.
So you guys feel it was a worthy winner of the Best Picture and Director? And
I feel it was.
Yeah. Certainly.
Yeah, I feel. And I do you think that that's a really good point? Mm. And I think if I was on that panel, I would also be influenced. Well, which is why I really liked it, because it chimes with a lot of my experience of that world, of the theatre world and stuff. I'm sure that plays into it. But I think even despite that, you know, the other themes that it covers and the ambiguity I really loved.
Yeah.
All the sort of magic realism stuff and playing to the height of the audience's intelligence and not telling them, oh, this is definitely what the reality is. This definitely isn't. I loved that. And I thought that was really brave, like big risks that really paid off. And it's really funny.
Can you give us, have we done the synopsis? Have we done that?
Yeah.
Can you kind of break it down? Give us an outline of the plot.
Okay.
For anyone who's thinking, what is it about?
Yeah. So it's about Regan Thompson, played by Michael Keaton, who is a Hollywood actor best known for playing Birdman. Which is a superhero character equivalent to Spider-Man or Batman. And it feels like he's a sort of faded actor by this time. So he tries to put on his own play, which is based on a short story by Raymond Carver. And he produces it, directs it, stars in it, and is beset by problems, basically, from all areas. And also has this inner voice, this critical inner voice, which is Birdman.
Who is probably kind of charging, is in charge of the magical realism. I think that's a great way to put it, actually.
Yeah.
Because the first kind of shot in the film is where you see him levitating and there's lots of things where he's kind of using telekinesis to move things.
And I love that because you never know whether that was the case or wasn't. if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Like as the audience, well, so you like think, you think you know.
So you think Regan Thompson might actually have some telekinesis powers outside?
Well, he might, because do you remember the ending? I don't want to give it away, yeah. But so yeah, he might do.
He's blotted away at the end, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not really, yeah, because I mean, there's a brilliant scene where it seems like he has got telekinesis powers, or however you pronounce it. And then when it goes back to Zach Galifianakis, his best friend walks into the room and just sees basically a bloke chucking stuff around.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the detritus of that. But so then you think, oh, okay, it's just in his mind.
Yeah.
But you don't really know as the audience whether it's not.
There's another scene that I picked up like
that. You decide yourself.
Mm. There's another scene I picked up like that where he's flying around New York.
Yeah.
And then you see him like land in front of,
yeah.
Come down in front of the theatre, then walk in.
Yeah.
And then the camera pans back and there's a taxi there saying, hey, yeah. Mate, you've not paid.
Yeah.
So walks in.
Yeah, so yeah.
There are those kind of, those parallels.
Yeah. And there's also lots of nice subplots about like the relationship that he has with his daughter, which I think is brilliant.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think Emma Stone is so great in this.
She's such a funny actor, isn't she? She's such a comic, good comic
yeah.
actor. She's brilliant.
Also really moving. Like,
yeah, she's great.
Yeah. I mean, because recently I enjoyed her in La La Land, but it was quite like what you would expect from a good quality performance. Yeah. It was just like what you'd expect. But this I felt was really different. And there's a moment when she really attacks her dad and then just the reactions on her face of thinking, oh, shit, I shouldn't yeah. have. I've gone too far.
Yeah.
I mean, like, her face is 70% eyes. It's just so, like, I think that works so well.
I immediately like people who are good hosts on SNL. And
oh, she's on SNL.
Everyone goes up in my estimations when they're good on SNL. And both Emma Stone and Michael Keaton have been brilliant on SNL. So I go, oh, they're probably really nice people who I get
yeah,
on with.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like, this is, I think, why it chimed with me, the question it asks of, is it better to just be famous, even if it's for some low art, or is it nobler to be less famous but for something that's high art?
Yeah,
you know, and that's what I think.
Yeah.
The idea of a faded star trying to cling on mm-hmm. to fame, but it's high art, so it's more worthy.
Yeah,
and Birdman tempting him back, going, "Hey, do that fourth Birdman."
Yeah.
Movie.
Get the fame back.
And get the fame back, because that's more important.
And that's what Edward Norton's character was about, was being yeah. famous mm. inside the theatre circles.
Yes.
And knowing how it mm. worked there.
Method actor.
Rather than Regan is it Thomas or Thompson?
Thompson.
Rather than Michael Keaton's character, mm. who was more about, I was super famous,
yeah.
and now I'm less so, but I can still do this thing. Honestly, I'm going to show you, this is it. Come and see it, please. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It's quite nice seeing Hollywood poking fun at method acting generally,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
A little
and that's what,
bit.
And that's where that critic comes into it, where she's got the agenda saying, you've come from the big leagues and now yeah. you're here, so I'm going to absolutely slate you.
Yes, yes.
And that's what her angle was before.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then she's being lofty and not even giving any of the chance, going, oh, no, you've come from the low art of movie. Everything starts being low art and then it becomes high art. So, like, theatre, it was like thieves and vagabonds, and then, then we started to see actors getting knighthoods, and that's now high art. And then movies came along. Oh, that's low art. That's just chewing gum nonsense. And now it's, oh, the movies. Oh, movies. Television is, ugh, no, television is the low art. Now you want to be on television. It's like viral stuff on, it's everything.
Yeah.
It all changes with each. So, oh, no, Vine stars. I'm going to look down on them. Oh, that, you know, there'll be something else that comes along that will be considered the next low art thing. So I like the sort of rib being snobbery of this
internally, yeah.
I like that. That's a good point.
Helen,
of this film,
what are your thoughts?
The reason I asked you to sort of give a brief synopsis of it was because I think watching it for the first time is kind of about Regan and the kind of magical realism, but then watching it again, I kind of thought it was more just about relationships,
yeah.
and all the relationships that all the different characters have.
Mm-hmm.
I thought watching it again from that sort of perspective was really interesting, because obviously you've got the relationship between Edward Norton and Naomi Watts, and then
yep.
you've then got his relationship with Regan's daughter, and then you've got the father-daughter relationship, the estranged husband and wife, and there's just so many interesting, and obviously, you know, the manager and Michael Keaton and the relationship they have, that he tries to try and protect him.
And the relationship between Michael Keaton and him. The lady who says she's pregnant, and
so it's actually quite an interesting relationship film on a base level, which I kind of thought was quite interesting the second time round. But yeah, the stuff with Birdman is a lot of fun though.
Had you seen the first time you saw it? Had you seen it at the cinema?
Yeah.
Where did you see it? Anywhere? I only asked because I saw it at the Phoenix in East Finchley.
Okay. What's that
which
like?
Is like, yeah, right, listeners. Okay.
Listen up.
If you're in North London, go to the Phoenix Cinema in East Finchley. So I think it was built in either. It was my local cinema for ages, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful cinema. And I think it was built in either 1911 or 1912. And it's had, like a lot of independent cinemas, it's been taken over and taken over and taken over. Hence, it's called the Phoenix because it keeps rising from its own ashes, cool. Which is quite nice. And then if you're in South London, go to the Ritzy in Brixton, which was, I think, the same year. And that's also had loads of different names. But anyway, the reason I mention it is it was quite a different experience watching it on the small screen. And I know you've got like a rating system, which we'll probably come to. And I think... It does lose something on a small screen, this one, because the cinematography is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I think it's glorious seeing it on a big screen. And I did notice it. Oh, it's a shame I'm watching this.
I don't know if it loses anything. It just becomes a different experience.
So maybe that's why you focused in on the relationships than, say, the sweeping.
The splendor. Mm.
Yes.
Because it is quite, with all the direction and the music, and it is so frenetic, you do kind of like... get caught up in it, and it is kind of a whirlwind, and that's maybe like the slightly gimmicky side of it. Whereas if you already know that that's coming and you expect that, then you're less sort of caught up with it, and maybe you notice something like the more like the nuances or the subtler things maybe that time around. Don't know.
Yeah, I think the relationships are lovely, like especially the one with him and his wife actually. It's because everything is quite complicated, and that's why I think it works.
That's one thing I completely forgot about that when it came around to the film again. I completely forgot that she's there, even though they're separated, and they're separated perhaps justly. They're still supporting each other.
It was really nuanced, and I thought that was really lovely. There was a lot of grey areas.
He's a bastard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really simple. It's actually, relationships are more multi-layered than that.
Yeah.
And there's no like... happy ending resolution particularly for anyone. So it's not like, oh, we made this and it made everything okay and now we're all a big happy family and blah blah blah. So it's
that's what I
like, doesn't have
that so much is just hanging in the air at the end. So
literally
So I read you know how every few minutes there's an article published saying millennials something something something, you know, so it's millennials ruined this or millennials think this or whatever, and it's, you know, obviously ridiculous, but the one that came into mind when I was rewatching Birdman was it said and let me see what you think about this. It said millennials like plots that are open-ended and ambiguous at the end, whereas older, like, so Generation X's and Baby Boomers like a very clear resolution.
I think that's such a sweeping statement.
It is. I mean, obviously, these things
isn't
are.
Isn't that the same thing with every millennial statement?
Of course, yeah. You know, you can get, so this is a slight sidestep, but you know, you can get you can get an add-on for your browser that changes all mentions of millennials to snake people.
I'm going to try it.
Amazing.
On Google Chrome.
Yeah.
I think we need to definitely talk about the different actors in this and how they were, and we've talked about Emma Stone.
Mm. Michael Keaton, perfect casting. Choosing someone who was known for superhero movie, is so good. What a great idea.
Because the whole concept of that it just makes sense straight away, but we've all discussed that how more nuanced and how different it is as a film. So the concept of like, let's get him involved.
But talking about millennials, do you think someone who didn't grow up with Michael Keaton as Batman and knows how that character has changed, would have the same feelings going into it and relating to the fact that Michael Keaton is the Birdman?
But that's what I mean about the high that's the hook for people kind of our age who knew the first quote unquote Batman, the Tim Burton Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But there is so much more to it that is more to give, and as you said, there's more in the story the second time around and other times around.
Yeah, I think it's a real stroke of genius that casting, because it does work on several levels, like whether you do or don't know that connection.
Yeah.
But also it's just, I think it's so lovely for him because
he's brilliant.
It's, I guess it's a bit like the actors that went into extras, as in the Ricky Gervais series, and you know, came out of that like with a renewed, some of them with like a sort of renewed thing. So it's sort of doing that in a way, but with so much like the character's got so much detail in it that it's not just a gag. Like, it's not just a gag of, oh, he used to be a superhero, now he's playing a character who used to be one. It's like, there's way much more. It's, you know what I mean?
It is always a pleasure to see Michael Keaton on. I can't think of anything, really.
So charismatic, isn't he?
Film or bad performance he's put in. And Beetlejuice is one of my
favourite
films.
He will always be Beetlejuice to me. Yeah, exactly. Not only a brilliant film, also a brilliant Halloween outfit.
Even like the other guys he plays.
In Jackie Brown and Out of Sight. That's the same character.
Yeah.
So even those like cameo performances, like I still think of those of like some of the best performances he does. He's absolutely kind of that guy in the background who's sort of outstaging the rest of the cast just by almost just being there.
Yeah. Come in, be awesome for a few days, leave. Yeah. That's like the dream, isn't it? That's like the actor's dream.
Totally.
As we record now, Spider-Man, the latest Spider-Man Homecoming is out there. Have you guys seen that at
No,
all?
I haven't. Yeah. Have you seen it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Do you like it?
I think it's fantastic. And
I've heard such good things about it.
And Michael Keaton is great in it as well.
Is he?
Yeah. Mm. So that's almost like a take on Batman. Birdman's a take on Batman.
And he's back in them.
And the Vulture's a take on him playing Birdman.
Life imitating art, imitating life.
That's amazing.
And also, I thought Edward Norton.
How have I not talked about Edward Norton yet?
Obviously, your favourite film being Fight Club.
Fight Club, yeah. It changes. We didn't confirm that.
We change it around sometimes, yeah. Well, we change it around, sorry.
I think he's great in this. And when he first started, he did sort of have the reputation for being quite the serious and method actor. Mm. You know, he was the new De Niro. For him to be playing this theatre method actor guy is, again, like the Birdman thing. So it's just really clever in ways like that. But who doesn't want to see Edward Norton and his flashy pants?
He is brilliant in it.
Doing comedy, which he has only really done maybe once or twice. And I think he should do a lot more comedy because he's very funny.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of works. So more comedy, please.
Yeah, totally. It really felt like he knows that that exact character. Like, you know, he's worked with exactly that character, or he's friends with, or it just felt really like very, very authentic.
I love it.
Just
when
played
he
it down the line as well.
Gets drunk for real.
Yeah.
It's like brilliant.
Yeah. So he wrecks the first preview because he's not drinking real gin and just
But the fact that he didn't do that you know, terrible comedy acting that some people do of like, oh, I'm doing comedy acting. He just played the character legit.
Yeah.
I think Eric Morecambe, which for your American listeners, it's a British comic from Morecambe and Wise. He said it'll never work if we the characters understand that we're funny. We have to do it like it's King Lear.
Yeah.
He said, and I think Edward Norton is doing that.
Yeah,
I'm playing the character completely legit, and there's no nudge and a wink to the audience at all, which I love.
I think they're all doing that, actually.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
that's not a bad... I mean, even Zach Galifianakis is not one of my favourite people.
I love him.
He's so good in this.
Do you not normally like him?
No, not based on Hangover.
Right.
It's one of those things where
everyone goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Seen him in other things where I think, he's a good comedic actor. When I ever see him on stage, he's funny. He's got this little web series called Between Two
Ferns.
It's
really funny.
Which is fucking hilarious.
It's good on Comedy Bang Bang as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
But true. Just
don't watch The Hangover then. Stop watching it.
I've only watched it once and I saw the second one and thought, fuck my life.
Well, you've watched the first one and then watched the second one. You've only got yourself to blame.
It was one of those things where I think I was traveling. I was away the year that Hangover came out and everyone came back saying, dude, you got to watch The Hangover. You got to watch The Hangover. And I thought I was missing out on
something.
But
you watched the second one as well.
Yeah, because it's one of those things, I watched it just the DVD by myself and thought, I think I'm missing out on something. I've missed out. I don't get a joke. And then I saw it at the cinema. I saw the second one in the cinema and just thought, this is woeful.
Have they made the third one?
Yeah, the third one.
Don't watch that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch the third one.
He says now.
But then,
cut to.
But then I love Bradley Cooper. I think Bradley Cooper's awesome, but he's got the black cloud of hangover hanging over his head.
Yeah.
The hangover of the hangover.
And Emma Stone, we talked about being 75%, 70% eyeballs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Eyes.
Yeah. I mean, she's great in anything.
Great. Yeah.
Again, I don't think she's done a bad performance at all, has she?
Nah, she's great.
Mm.
And Naomi Watts is...
She's brilliant as playing kind of the actress that's getting older and kind of realises it. And it's also kind of sad because I think she recently had an interview where she said basically her roles have now stopped because she's over 40 or
whatever. Such a shame, that kind of thing, isn't it?
So, but it's the way she plays it is very raw, and it's kind of like you're saying this as a character, but we know for a fact that that is kind of the reality for a lot of female actresses. Yeah.
Mm. Susan, you wrote a sketch about auditioning as an actress through your life, and that there's a huge dearth. And
yeah,
it was
that's
really
right.
We did it together.
Yeah.
And there's like
there's a gap between what, 30 and 60.
And it was like, and it's suddenly, oh, so you're auditioning for the elderly Alzheimer's patient. And I forget how it ended. It was a really funny line. Yeah. Funny. Anyway, but it's that's true. There's this huge dearth in the middle of your in the middle of your career where it's like, oh, so you play pretty young girl next door, and then it's mums.
Yeah, young mums.
And then yummy mummies, and then nothing crone.
Yeah, that's basically how it goes. But that's right. And I thought it was really lovely that scene she had with Andrea Riseborough, who I think is awesome. And Naomi Watts' character is so excited about her first time on Broadway.
Yeah.
And again, that really rang true in terms of, you know, when it's someone's first time in the West End or whatever, it's a really big deal. It's really lovely. And I just thought those little details were really nicely explored, and her performance was great at that moment. And when they both sort of lose it and start kissing each other, it was just brilliant. These characters like living really sort of intense, sort of just bubble lives of the show, and so they make these really strange choices, and yeah, that was great.
Go on.
I just wanted also just to say really quickly about the drumming.
Yeah.
I really like the fact that the reason for the drumming being in there, well, you know, one of the reasons was because they didn't have the same editing powers of editing. They wanted the drums to use for comedy purposes, as in like to get the rhythm of the rhythm of the plot and the rhythm of the jokes. And I thought that was brilliant.
Because you do, when you can have literally percussion giving you a rhythm.
Because
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and like as a person who does comedy and is obsessed with it, I really loved when I was watching it, there were the odd moments where there was like action, 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 drums, 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 and then it just went, it cut away, the drums stopped and the gag happened, and it was like the reverse of a brum-ching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the reverse of a brum-ting.
Mm. Yeah, because it's kind of building up to a crescendo, wasn't it? And then,
anyway, I found that really pleasing.
That would have been deliberately done.
Yeah.
To punctuate the film.
Yeah,
that's
fascinating.
So, do you want to take the lead on this, Helen?
Yeah, my favourite word ever invented.
Yeah.
The recommendability score. So we'll start with you, Susan, because it's your film. Scores are out of 5. You can have points,
decimals,
something, if you wish.
This is how easy it is to recommend.
Yeah. Well, how much you'd recommend it, but also...
How widely.
And also, if you just really like it, I think.
I'm going to go for 4.5.
Hi.
Because I really loved it, but I'm aware that not everyone will.
I like it a lot. I'm going to give it 4. Around 4.
Fair.
Yeah.
I was originally going to give it a 4.5, but after my investigation into IMDb people giving it 1, I'm going to give it a 5.
Oh.
Because I want people to watch it, and I think it's quite funny how people were so riled the fact that this film had been rated so highly. I mean, The Guardian gave it like a 5 out of 5, got 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think the IMDb score was a lot higher, like around the 10s. And people watched it. I just like, this is really, and I just think reading some of those reviews, it's hilarious, you know, the length of the reviews and what
really?
They've been saying. Yeah, it's brilliant. So, I'm going to recommend it to everyone and enjoy the fallout of that.
Well, it's good that it's got a split reaction.
I think people feel, and this is something in comedy in particular, people feel left out of the gang.
Right.
And that's why one-star reviews are so angry a lot of the time. It's like, why aren't I in the gang? You know? Mm. And also, I think in particular comedy, I guess this is a comedy, it's complex and it's comedy drama and there's other stuff going on. But Do you find that, Susan? Like, yeah. With comedy reviews in because particular are so venomous. Mm.
They're angry that they don't get the joke.
Yeah, it's like, well, I want to be in the group and I'm not. Mm. And that stirs up reactions, I think, of just not being part of the gang. So there we go. Mm.
I'm going to give it a 4, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think the reasons will become a bit more clear as we go through the rest of the scoring system. But I think...
Okay. Mysterious.
Repeat viewing score, Susan.
Because we'd all seen it before, haven't we?
Yeah, yes. I've seen it in the cinema before watching it here.
No, I hadn't actually.
Oh, had you not? No. So I'd seen it, yeah, I've seen it now once on the big screen, once on the small screen. Yeah.
Mm. I'm going to go for 5 because I think there's so much in it that you can get each time you watch. You can sort of find new surprises. So, yeah.
Cool. I'm going to go with 4.5. I think, you're absolutely right. There's loads. Mm-hmm. There's loads going on. And probably see it on a big screen if you can, because I think it's really pretty.
Well, that's the next score, really.
Oh, small screen score, yeah.
Skipping ahead.
Anyway, Helen. Sorry, Helen.
So I'm going to go for a 4. I think it's about a once a year watch. maybe if we...
On the scale where 4... Yeah.
I mean, if I'd only seen it once, then I would have given it a 5. But now I've seen it twice. I'm like, well, I could watch it again, but maybe not like...
Not
for another year.
Yeah. I think it's, I'm going to give it about, I'm going to give it a 3 because I think I'll definitely watch it again, but I don't think I'll be in the super rush to watch it.
5 years for you.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a weird scale here. But I will watch it again, certainly, but not sure it'll be at the top of my list now seeing it again. Small screen score. This is
I
where
this I'm, is going to be the one that's going to conjure the most discussion.
So you didn't. Susan is going to lead us on the small screen score, mm-hmm. but you didn't see it in the cinema.
No.
Okay.
So I saw it on iPad sized screen.
When?
As
for
in,
this for this time.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen it?
The director had a coronary. Okay. Hearing
both
that.
Times. Both times you saw it on iPad.
The other time was like laptop, so slightly bigger.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I didn't see it at the cinema.
Alejandro is weeping right now.
I'm so sorry.
But you still write it a lot, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so it does. Clearly it doesn't...
Yeah, it still translates.
Yeah, it still translates to me. I'm still going to score it high because I thoroughly enjoyed it on a small screen.
Yeah,
so I'm going to say 4.5 because I think, obviously, on a big screen, I would get even more out of it. So, yeah.
You leave a little bit of room for manoeuvre on that one. Okay, I'm going to say 3.5. I think it's difficult. It's almost like comparing apples and oranges, actually, because I think it's a, like you were saying earlier, it's almost a completely different experience that you get. I tell you something that would be, I think, almost the exact opposite would be, what's the film? Oh, I shouldn't have started this if I don't know the name of the film. What is it? We Something in the Shadows.
What we do in the shadows
yeah. is like the exact opposite, where it's like, I think that's one that would absolutely work on a small screen because it's basically 3 episodes of a sitcom and that's pushed together.
That's our highest rated film at the moment.
The one
is it?
Yeah.
Oh man, what a sharp comment I just made. But I think this, it's like, it's because it's been crafted for the big screen so much as well. I think I'm just going to give it a bit of room for upping that score. So I'm going to put 3.5. That's okay. For me.
Helen?
I'm going to give it a 4. Oh. I enjoyed watching it at the cinema, but I don't think I enjoyed it less watching it on a TV size screen. I wouldn't recommend you watch it on an iPad. I think treat yourself, plug in your Netflix into a TV or go around someone's house who's got a really big TV. But I think the sound plays a big part as well. So even if you've got quite a small screen, if you can, you've got a really good sound system, or you could even watch it on headphones, I think just kind of feel like you're involved in it, because obviously in the cinema, you've got the sound going around you. If you can become more immersed in it, regardless of your screen size, then I think you still kind of get the same feeling from that. So I don't think it's particularly lost anything going onto the small screen, but seeing it on a big screen would be really good. Like maybe they could have it on an open air screen with like some live drumming or something.
But it'd be a good thing
that'll
to do.
Happen, wouldn't
like
it?
A silent, like
Secret
a,
Cinema will do
like
that.
Silent film. I'm going to kind of disagree with you all. I'm going to give it a 2, I think.
Whoa!
And that's based on my experience watching the first time in the cinema versus what I felt on Netflix on this time round.
Yeah.
And this has been the kind of biggest drop off for me in terms of cinema experience to non-cinema. But I should preface that by saying I watched like all the Marvel films in the cinema, and haven't watched them again on TV since they've come out.
No, that makes sense. I think
I enjoyed it more watching it on the second time round was a better experience for me.
Well, for me, it's when I left the cinema the first time, I was like on cloud nine. I was like, that was unbelievable. Really like hit me. I think, unlike you're saying, with the audio and the whole kind of the whole cinematic high concept and everything, just kind of really drew me in. But this time around, it just didn't have me as much, and that's probably reflecting my repeat viewing score as well. And I'm less likely to watch it again, and that's what the small screen score is about, really, for me. I think it's a great film, but I loved it so much in the cinema, and it didn't hit me in the same way again. Even though there were different layers to build upon, it didn't hit me in the same way again as it did when I left the screen. Engagement score.
I'm going to go straight in with a 5. yeah, big fan.
4.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a 4. It's great. It's a great film. But is it Tootsie starring Dustin Hoffman? So it can't get a 5 from me.
I saw that recently for the first time.
Did you?
It's great.
It's the best. Oh. Listeners.
So brilliant.
Listeners, I went to see it for the first time. Sorry, it's the first time on the big screen. I'd only ever seen it on VHS and on DVD. And oh my God, I had a great time at the Prince Charles Cinema. It's the best film ever. So everything has to be, that's the scale for me, is from 0 to Tootsie.
Yeah.
And so it can never quite hit Tootsie for me. So that's what, hence my 4. That's the stupidest answer.
No, you got it. I mean, my recommendability score is based on, even though it's not perhaps my all-time favourite film, but Back to the Future is
yes!
a film you can recommend to absolutely
yes!
everyone.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's 5, so it's all kind of based against
absolutely.
Back to the Future.
Yeah. We totally have different scoring systems.
That's fine, that's all.
Lives across the board for Back to the Future. Oh my God. Yeah.
Helen.
Well, back to Tootsie. If you like reading about it also, you should read Hadley Freeman's Life Moves Pretty Fast.
I should read that.
Because there's a nice section
absolutely
on that.
Such a good movie. And I teach at a few drama schools, and I lecture them every year going, guys, you've got to watch Tootsie, it's the best film ever. I literally was doing that earlier today. And it's perfect for if you love acting, you love theatre, you love film actually, and television, it's a great film to watch. Because again, it's another film about film and about acting.
It's kind of a weird one because my parents used to record lots of films. I think that's probably the reason I love film so much, because we just used to, summer holidays, go through all the VHSs that they'd recorded. But I used to base it on the film title. So Tootsie for me was like, that's not interesting. Like The Graduate, what? Nah, I don't want to watch that. It's like The Good, Bad and Ugly. That sounds quite interesting. Let's put that on there. RoboCop. Yeah, of course I'm going to put that. The Terminator. Yeah. But so Tootsie,
I mean,
just never.
Everything you've named there is an excellent film.
Yeah. To this day, I've never seen Tootsie, and I have read.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Susan, you would love it so much.
And I've read Life Moves Pretty Fast, and still not watched it. And it's a good chapter.
It's aged pretty well.
It's aged incredibly well. And in less deft hands, it could have aged very badly. Yeah, it's done very well, hasn't it? The costume. I mean, the costumes are hideous in it. Oh my God. What were the 80s doing? It's 1982. And who would wear that? It's horrible.
So, Helen, anyway, engagement.
This is a tough one. I think a lot of people would give up on it after a while.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think.
Because I think you have to be in it to be in it.
Yeah, I agree, actually, you're right.
But I think as soon as you start watching it, you're in it.
But I think that's also true. But I think because it is slightly odd, and it is a bit bewildering, and, you know, there's a lot going on in it,
mm-hmm.
that I think it might be a bit too much for some people. And like you said about people not getting the joke. They're the kind of people who don't... If you've really got to go into it and go, okay, this is a little bit weird, this is a little bit odd, but I'm just going to let it happen and take what I can. So for me, obviously watching it the second time round, I was pretty into it, but for different reasons this time. So I think I'm going to go 4.5.
Oh, it's still high. I thought you were going to preamble to a low.
Just because I'm thinking that I could see how someone wouldn't get along with it.
You've been empathetic towards other people's feelings.
I know. But I'm just thinking about it now. I actually really like this film, I think. A lot more than I did the first time.
Well, your score is 4.375, which is
quite
high.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a high score because I think you have to be involved.
You can't.
I think if I turned it on in the first 5 minutes, I just wasn't in the mood, I'd switch off because you can't dip into it.
You can't have it on in the background.
Yeah. No. So I'm going to give it a 4 for engagement score because it has to be like you're involved in it or you're not. Mm-hmm. And if you're thinking about other things, it's just going to completely lose you. Mm-hmm. So that gives us an overall score of 4.09.
Yeah, it's pretty strong.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah. Yeah,
pretty and for high. A film that's just shy of 2 hours as well.
It is. Mm. I didn't mention the running length, which is important to me, and it is nearly 2 hours.
Are you a 90-minute person?
Oh, I love a good 90-minute film.
Me too. Oh my God. It's like one of the first things I look at. And you go, what's happened to films in the last couple of decades? Like, what the hell? Keep it at 90 minutes. Yeah. Tootsie's actually quite long.
A bit long, but it breezes by. Cool. If it breezes by, I don't mind. But
One of the films we reviewed before we bring this to a close recently was That Thing You Do, and the main criticism for it, even though I really enjoyed it, and Helen, you enjoyed it as well, but the two guests,
it's all right.
But it's 2 hours and 29 minutes long.
Oh, come on! And filmmakers, get a
what
grip.
What I found out recently was that on Netflix, that's the extended cut, so I've added an extra 39 minutes.
Whoa!
Oh my goodness!
Which is
not required for that kind of film. Just not required for that kind of film at all. So
yeah, what was the filler? I mean, there was so much more than 40 minutes they could have chopped out. Absolutely. As well.
Wow. I feel like that about theatre, unless it's a brilliant production.
Yeah, me too.
Especially like, because when you're at the Edinburgh Fringe,
it's an hour.
Yeah, an hour straight through, you know where you are.
It's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah.
So, yeah, it's great.
I feel like I've got an internal clock that when I see a play that's longer than an hour, when it hits about an hour, I'm going, oh, come on, it's guys. Like,
will there be an interval when I get to wee?
And unless it's really brilliant, in which case you don't care, but yeah.
And so at this point, we'll just go to the Birdman reviews on the Twitter.
On the Twitter.
So we gave Birdman 4.1. And we'll go to Amanda's pick show. I saw it and had to leave the theatre because I got sick of the constantly moving camera. 2 stars for the acting.
Oh, that's harsh.
Oh, I'm quite shocked by that.
Yeah.
Boyhood should have won Best Picture. And we talked about the Oscars thing. I think that year, Boyhood was my favourite film.
Mm. It's tricky, isn't it?
But it's one of the things...
Cause Whiplash.
It's three hours long. I don't think I'll watch it again.
Yeah, it's a bit gimmicky.
Yeah. And Podstalgic says, I'd argue Whiplash, so completely agrees with yourself.
Oh, there you go.
But they're different films.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Birdman. Has anyone actually done it properly? Let's have a quick look.
Well,
look at all those thumbs down.
Thumbs down and two devil emojis.
Christian Steele, he's not happy about it at all.
No.
Shitegeist Pod.
Shitegeist Pod, great.
They've been on our show, fantastic guys. Great performances all round, solid drumming and stunning cinematography. Mm. Norton stole the show.
Yes.
Low rewatch value there.
Interesting.
That's 3.5 stars.
I like it that they've used your system
Yes.
of reviewing.
Gold stars.
Mm-hmm. And
I love Birdman. 5 stars, beautiful film.
Yeah, WWT podcast. Thank you very much. Death by Film says Keaton is so excellent and the directing is so fluid. Mm. It's such a brilliant piece of cinema.
Yeah, fluid is a good word for it in general.
Wow.
Which one are you
looking at? Zombie_kitty_podcast.
Yep, thought it was interesting editing and filming wise, but otherwise forgettable. It was way overhyped.
Oh my goodness, look at this as well, the next one.
Yeah, Chelsea Williford, at Jana Williford. One of the most boring films I saw that year. Pretty good acting, nice camera work, did not deserve Oscar wins.
This is interesting.
2 stars for Michael Keaton.
Oh my God. I'm making assumptions that the zombie kitty may also... I think women do not like this film.
Right.
I think this is kind of a man's film a little bit.
Really?
I think so, yeah. I think... I remember that's what I thought of it when I saw it the first time around.
Oh.
I don't know why, but I think a lot of women think it's just shit.
Oh,
I think.
Interesting.
And out of people that I know who've seen it, it's generally the male people that I've asked who've given it the more warmer reviews.
Mm. But it does go at odds to what we've discussed here in this episode, where we've got a pretty high score across the board, and it's 3 women to 1 guy in this room.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And who actually,
you guys are stars of stage and screen, so you probably have more
actors. We've got an in with this world, maybe a tiny bit.
All right,
interesting idea though.
Mm.
That it's a man's film. I wonder whether that's true.
Who's the thought?
Guys, can you sign off and let us know where we can find you?
You can find me on my own at SueHarrison123, and then our podcast, which is at
Two Stars Podcast.
At Two Stars Podcast.
And you can also find us on the British Comedy Guide. Just search for Hayley and Ruth Two Stars. Oh, and I'm Gemma Arrowsmith. You can find my Twitter and Facebook and everything, and my YouTube through my website, which is gemmaarrowsmith.com.
Fantastic.
And my website is susanharrisoncharacters.com.
Brilliant.
We'll link to that anyway in the show notes.
Cool. Thanks.
Cheers for coming on, guys.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thank you.
Bye. Thanks for listening. You can find all of the episodes on our website, flixwatcher.tv. Want to give us your 5-star review? Follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter. Big shout out to our editor, Brendan Russell, for all his awesome editing skills. And thanks as always to the mighty people for their tunes.